Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And it is 10 a.m. on a beautiful, sunny Sunday morning. It's actually 10:15. I'm lying. I'm a liar. How are you doing this morning, Tony?
I'm tired.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm
in pain.
Oh, no. What's wrong?
I messed up my shoulder somehow. So about the last 3 days, I've been just dealing with, like shoulder pain, but also like creeping up to my neck.
Oh no.
So it's just like, I'm like, oh, you know, I don't feel as bad, or it's not that bad. But as soon as I go to sleep, since I'm like not moving at all for, you know, hours on end.
Yeah.
By the time I wake up, like, it's so stiff and it starts to hurt again.
Jeez, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Do you have any ways to like kind of take care of that, or?
Honestly, I don't know. I just been taking ibuprofen sometimes, and I don't want to go anywhere to like, cause like normally like if I had like back pains or shoulder pains or anything, like I go like get massage or something. But I don't want to be near anyone. So
yeah.
Like,
no, it makes sense.
Just, so as of right now, I'm like just taking it day by day.
Got you. Well, man. Here I am hoping that you feel better. I'm sure everybody else listening is also hoping that you feel better.
Yeah.
I would give you my shoulder if I could, but then you'd look a little bit lopsided. You know? It's like, I don't know.
No one's seeing me.
Your shoulders are bigger than mine. You've got like your shoulder is like three of my shoulders.
Probably.
So I can give you two of mine and you could just only be a little bit lopsided. I'll just take the one. I'm okay. Anyways. Before we get started with the episode today, we're going to remind everybody to follow us and our social media platforms at The Arrowpod on Instagram and Twitter. Fun stuff going on over there. Know exactly when we post the new episodes. Yo, the photo that you posted last week, the Long Live the Queen photo with Zaheer in the in like the hat and the glasses. Oh my gosh, that was so funny. Where'd you find
it? I saw it online a long time ago, like a long, long time ago. So it took me a while to find it again. Because it just popped into my head. I was like, oh, like, and I was like looking for it and I could not find it for the life of me. Mm-hmm. It took me like an hour to be able to find it. So it's funny because people like commented on it prior. I mean, after the fact, or even Steph was like, wait, why does he have a hat? Like, you don't like necessarily notice it like at first glance.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty funny.
Yeah, and then also, I've forgotten to ask you. I think I sent it to you. I'm not entirely sure, but have you? Because it got sent to me again this week. Have you seen this picture that's been going around the internet, kind of at like a steady pace recently? It's of Zuko doing the dancing dragon, but the dragon behind him is Jake Long.
No, you didn't send me that. I saw it. Like, I just happened to see. I think it was like yesterday. I barely saw it.
Yeah. Dude, that one's really funny. That one's really funny. I like it a lot. Yo, we should, if we ever get Dante on an episode, that would be,
I'm gonna start creeping on his stream more.
Dude. Yeah. Honestly, I'll just start sending emails every day. That might not be the way. That might not be the way, but
he's a cool guy. Like, I was surprised he remembered us. Cause I was on his, I was just randomly on his stream. He's playing League. And then just off of my account, like Cool Cat Tony, I just like commented as like
hello from The Arrow.
Hello from the Arrow podcast. And then he pointed it out. He's like, oh, and then like give us a shout out saying like, oh, they're a podcast, they, you know, talk about everything Avatar. And I was like, oh wow, it's so sick that he actually remembered us.
Yeah, dude, Dante, he's really cool. Like, we got to meet him. He's a really cool guy. I mean, I feel like nobody doubts that he's like a really cool guy, but he's like, he is like really cool. It really seems like he loves getting to meet the fans and to talk to people when he goes out and does like public appearances and stuff like that. So, you know, I didn't get to talk to him a couple years ago, but I was at a Comic-Con panel where people got to ask him questions and stuff like that. And he's still super, like involved and grateful for like all of the activity in this community.
Yeah.
So, it's really cool just to see him shouting us out like that and stuff like that. So if you guys don't already like follow Dante Bosco, like follow him too. Like, cool guy. So anyways, why don't we get into today's episode?
Ooh, today's episode's a good one.
We are going to be talking about The Ultimatum, episode number 11. This the penultimate to the penultimate episode. the third to last episode in this series. Not in the series, in the season.
Season.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we've got an entire fourth season to talk about with you guys. But episode starts off Ba Sing Se is completely in chaos, just completely and utterly, just complete utter madness.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up, like fires everywhere. Yeah. People are just like breaking into the palace, just like
they don't care at all. They're just breaking in, literally like grabbing like anything that's not nailed to the floor.
Yeah.
Even one of the guards is like, they go up to one of the guards, is like, "You can't stop us." He's like, "Stop you? I want to join you."
Yeah. He's like, "I know where all the good stuff is. What are you talking about? This was my job." Mako and Bolin kind of like, you know, get out of there. And then they get to one of the ships and Mako tries to pull the whole, like, "I am with Republic City Police." I'm like, "Mako, this is not going to work right now. Like, what are you doing?" But luckily, Bolin comes in with his, you know, with his comedic relief, but also like better idea and says, "Yo, we found all the gold, it's here," and then they all leave, right? Like,
yeah.
It just makes sense. Whew, wow, big yawn.
So once they get into the fire, the airship, there, like, you can truly see, like every other building's, like, on fire. So they figured, like, hey, we have to go get our family. We have to get our family out of here. But once they get there, they see just everyone's there. Like, no one's attempted to leave or anything, and they're all kind of just chilling in the same room. And that's because their grandma does not want to leave.
Yeah, she's like, "No, this is my home. I'm not abandoning where my, I raised my family." And Mako's like, "Home is where the heart is." And then she's like, "No." And so then Bolin's like, "Pretty please?" No. Actually, Bolin comes back and he says, "No, well, I'm just going to take you." And he like puts her on his shoulder. She's like, wait. Let me take my picture of the Earth Queen really quick. So they get the family onto the airship as like the building kind of like burns down and crumbles.
Mm-hmm.
And then like she puts her picture up in the airship. She's like, "Is this our airship, our new home?" Like, no, but we're going to go find the Avatar. So they're like going through the desert.
Yeah, they pretty much backtracked on their flight pattern that they were supposed to be taking, and then where they apparently crashed. So they were kind of just scouring the desert horizon, trying to find any signs of their crash. Mm-hmm. And then their cousin finally finds like some sort of wreckage. They go over, but there's like nothing there other than the tracks. What was it, like the
sand sailor tracks?
Sand sailor, there you go. Sand sailor tracks, yeah. Where I'm like, they're still there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so Cherie said the same thing when we were watching the episode, but I think that, like, hey, this is all happening on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so those tracks are relatively fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the idea is that if the desert wasn't that windy, like, those tracks would have stayed there for at least a little while.
Shifting sands.
There's no Mongolian death worm, like, carrying... Korra killed the Mongolian death worm with her fire blast, so...
It died?
You know,
she's
it got
a murderer?
Cooked. It got cooked. Remember when Aang killed that, like, buzzard? That buzzard thing?
We don't... No, we don't talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
That never happened.
We don't talk about what?
We don't do it. What?
Huh? You mean when Aang did...
Beep. No one mentions that.
Anyways.
He just went to sleep.
Oh yeah, he just went to sleep after getting hit with like 10G force of air. Let's go. Okay. Anyways, so we actually are able to track via. You know what was so dumb, actually?
What's up?
The dumb part about it was that, like, Mako's like, the wreckage is somewhere between here and the Misty Palms Inn. And you know where they end up? They just end up at the Misty Palms Oasis. Oh, I guess it's not the inn, but it's, like, right next to the inn. It's, like,
the
Misty Palms Oasis is, like, come on. Okay, anyways, it's not as dumb as I thought it was, but it's still only a little bit dumb. But what happens? Oh, So they almost kill Zuko's dragon straight up. If it didn't wake up a second earlier.
That's pretty good reflexes.
Yeah, if it hadn't woken up a second earlier, they would have crushed his dragon. And then they go in, and then, like, Bolin is just completely starstruck.
Yeah, fanboys out to Lord Zuko.
Yeah. He's like, oh, it's a pleasure to meet you. But I
again,
think,
how we would all act.
Dude, honestly, if I met Zuko, I'd be like, yo. Can I touch your face? That's the first thing I would say to Zuko. Can I touch your face?
So we find out that Zaheer's message was that he was heading to the Northern Temple.
Wait, you missed a part, though.
Oh, I missed a part? What did I miss?
Mako and Bolin's grandma meeting Korra and Asami.
Oh, yeah.
which is largely inconsequential. But she thinks that Asami's the Avatar because she's so beautiful. And mm-hmm. then, like, she's like, oh, you're the Avatar? Why are you so manly?
No, you're so muscular.
Yeah, she's basically calling her manly. She's very traditional. Mm-hmm. And embarrassing because she's like, Mako, why don't you date a nice young lady like this?
Like these two. And she's like holding both her hands.
Charisse lost it at that point. Like I said, this is like Charisse's first time seeing like all of these episodes past mm-hmm. season two because she gave up after season two, just like a lot of people did. You know, yeah. I think a lot of people gave up.
I didn't realize how many people just kind of fell off.
Yeah.
Like I knew that was a thing, but like, surprisingly, like, people that were, like, that watched this, like, when it was out on TV, like, just mm-hmm. completely, like, just left it.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, this show's bad now.
Yeah, like I mentioned in, like, I joined the Facebook group, The White Lotus, and then there's a lot of people, like, since, like, we have about a week until
Korra comes out to Netflix.
Yeah, so it's a little bit more accessible for everyone. So a lot of people are kind of just like, oh, like, you know, don't be haters or give it a chance for people that haven't had the opportunity to do so. And then a lot of people are kind of just talking that, like, oh, like, I've never watched any of those, like, after season two.
Yeah.
And, like, I just lost interest and I thought it was a waste of time. And I was like, what? Like,
yeah, no.
Like, you say you're an Avatar fan, but you're like still not willing to, you know, continue on to these seasons, even after like majority of people are like, you know, these are really good.
Yeah, and so what you're bringing up too is like like my sister, for example, she watched a little bit of Avatar when we were kids, but she was already like probably like late into middle school. Mm-hmm. Like almost into high school when Avatar started coming. So she was like kind of like past it, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so she watched a little bit of it with me, but as we kind of started growing up more, like she started just kind of doing her own thing. And I was like still like in fifth grade when it came out. And so what, like, she just recently watched Avatar as it came out on Netflix, and she was like, wow, this show was so good. And I was like, oh, you should watch Korra. And she's like, I don't know, I hear people saying like it's not good. And I'm like, no, it's really good. And I told her, like, I think that, like, and I can continue to maintain this, higher highs, lower lows. Mm-hmm. I think if season two was actually, if season two was like better, I probably would like the entire show more.
Yeah.
And I told her that, and I was like, you have to watch it in its entirety, and you have to watch season two, and season two is not like very good, but if you watch it, like, it's so worth getting to seasons three and four.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, is it on Netflix? And I was like, no, but now it's going to be. And so I think she's going to watch it. But I have a lot of friends who just like never watched past season two. And I'm like, you guys, you have to. And they're like, but now if I want to watch it, I have to rewatch it and watch season two. And I'm like, it's worth it. I promise you, for an episode like this, it's so worth it.
Yeah.
It's so worth it. But back to your point. They are finding out where Zaheer is.
Oh, yeah. So we found out last episode that Zaheer let the boys go because he had specifically a message for Korra and he wanted them to deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they were kind of rushing to try to find her, because Zaheer's message was that they were heading to the Northern Temple and he was going to wipe out the new airbenders unless she turns herself over to him.
Right. And so Korra tries to meditate and finds Zaheer in mm-hmm. Zai Bao's grove. Is that it? Zhao Bai's Grove or Zhai Bao's Grove? At the Grove.
Yeah, at the Grove.
And Cora essentially, she doesn't find him, but she actually finds Iroh. Iroh walks up and is like looking for a new teapot. And so what happens is she talks to Iroh and it's just like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't connect with my past lives anymore. And I'm the only avatar that wasn't able to do that. And Iroh's like, you know, Zuko and Aang were like the best of friends. Their relationship started off a little rocky, you know. I thought that was funny. Yeah, the relationship started off a little rocky. Nah, my nephew was only trying to capture him so that like the Fire Lord could kill him. But you know, that's neither here nor there.
Ancient history.
And so we actually get Korra seeking counsel in Zuko, who gives her some advice that like sounds very much like Aang. Like, yes, he would have done anything to protect the airbenders, and he also knew that his duty was to the world and not just to any one nation. It's like, wow, your grandfather was, or your uncle was right. You were very knowledgeable. He's like, you spoke to my uncle?
Yeah. That's the thing where I'm so surprised. Where a lot of people are kind of confused in that point, because Zuko is really confused that she spoke to her uncle. So a lot of people are kind of speculating that does he not know that Zuko, that his uncle left to the spirit world? And did he think that he just passed on and that he wasn't accessible after, you know, the spirit portals have been opened and that's why he hasn't gone and seen him himself? Or is that just a shock because like, oh, like I didn't know you would have spoke to him in the spirit world?
You know, also, I don't know, do you think that Iroh, at his old age, right, Iroh would have been pretty old when he decided to go to the spirit world. And he, like, because, you know, Kaya, Bumi, and Tenzin knew him, and knew him, like, relatively well. So that means that, like, Tenzin was at least old enough to at least have some sort of relationship with Iroh. So yeah. Iroh would have been pretty old. Do you think that Iroh would have been at a point where, you know, he's on his deathbed and he's deciding, like, I'm going to, like, pass on to the spirit world, that he would be able to communicate that to people, you know? It might be something that could be assumed if you knew him really well, but, like, maybe Zuko just never considered it a possibility. I don't know. I feel like there's like, room for interpretation there.
Yeah, that's...
It's a story that I don't necessarily think I need to have be told.
Yeah, I'm always very, really confused with that. With the whole him leaving to the spirit world and everything, because I mean, a healthy dose of Fran made a YouTube video on it about 2 weeks ago, I think. So not too long ago, where she kind of went into to Iroh's kind of a spiritual journey and how he would have passed on essentially, and they kind of go into the whole his connections with the dragons as well. As those are like spiritual creatures in themselves. And so it's pretty interesting. But prior to that, like I always believed that he chose to like go to the spirit world and leave his physical body. So I thought that was always just like an actual decision that he made to meditate, to leave to the spirit world. And I thought it was like known that he went to the spirit world because it was his like decision to do so, because he said like my business was done here. So I'm like, is that like my business is done because I'm about to die, or is it like, oh, like I don't feel like, you know, I have anything else to do here, so now I want to be able to leave to the spirit world?
Maybe he restores the relationship between Zuko and Azula, and then
he's like, peace.
No, I think, you know, if it like in the way that we're saying like his business was done, I feel like it very much has something to do with Zuko, you know, allowing Zuko to become, you know, a really, really great Fire Lord.
Yeah.
Providing counsel to him and like feeling very confident that Zuko can carry out the duties without Iroh being able to have to guide them. I think that would probably be part of it. But yeah, I think that it could go either way. I think that he could like make it well known, or I think that also, you know, I think that there's this level of Iroh that still liked to be a little bit private with his life. As much as he loved Zuko, I think Zuko was the thing that he cared about most in the world after his son died.
Yeah.
And even while his son was alive, I don't think that it's like a, I don't know if it was like a ranked order kind of thing, you know. I think that Iroh really always cared about Zuko as if he was his son. And so to me, Iroh being private, never having told anybody about the White Lotus, but that was kind of another thing, never really telling anybody about his, like never telling Zuko about his adventures with the dragons, that's like a whole another thing, you know Iroh really was a person who just liked to watch things happen and let them play out. He could have easily stepped in at the boy in the iceberg and said, like, hey, let's talk about this really. But he didn't. He let this thing go on for like 3 seasons, you know? So it wouldn't surprise me if he just made it a really private decision and just did it. And people found him like having quietly passed on in his sleep. You know what I mean? I wouldn't doubt either one of those two things. Or he goes to the Sun Warriors and then Ren and Shaw burn him. Like they like
alive.
What if it was like they do the fire, the colored, multicolored fire around Iroh as he meditates, and that's like an easier way for him to meditate into the spirit world. That would be pretty cool. But
oh, okay, no, I was so confused for a second. I was like, did Iroh firebend in the spirit world? But he didn't. He was holding a torch when he found. When he found Korra, never mind.
You were like, did he physically go?
Yeah, to did the he physically pass his entire body so he had the ability to bend in the spirit world? Wait, no. Yeah,
I don't think so.
Wait, but, no, that was a torch.
So those are like a lot of different theories. But yeah, Zuko's really surprised. And then we don't even get to see the gratification of this little conversation. In my head canon, Korra and Zuko get to talk about this at some point later. Maybe like 4 years from now. no time soon, but they get to talk about this eventually off screen, and it's a very good conversation because Korra gets to learn a little bit more about Aang from some angles that she doesn't get to learn about him, because she only maybe hears about him from Tenzin and Katara, and she wants to hear about, and she gets to hear about him from Zuko, and then Korra gets to tell Zuko about how Iroh's doing, and it's like a nice little afternoon conversation.
But anyway.
Yeah, let's keep going.
So this whole conversation took place in the Metal Clan, something that we didn't mention. And Sue was trying to get someone to contact Tenzin at the Northern Air Temple, but they were getting no response this entire time. So once they were having this conversation, why it was interrupted, it was because they finally got in contact with someone, and it just happened to be someone that wasn't really compliant throughout conversation.
It was Milo. Milo was basically playing the game like, I'm not a Krusty Krab. This is Patrick. that's literally what Milo was doing. He was like, who's Bolin? Bolin's not here right now.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. No, I'm Bolin. And then Korra has to be like, Milo, this is your commanding officer. Get your dad here right now. Right away, sir. Like, I just... I love how Korra had built up a really good relationship with Milo, that like she knows how to communicate with him. Like, honestly, almost sometimes it feels better than like Tenzin. You know, like she just kind of gets him. And it's really funny.
And they finally get a hold of Tenzin, let him know that the Red Lotus is heading towards them, but they're too late because at that instance they see the airship had arrived already.
Yeah, Zaheer's staring Tenzin down in the face through the window. He's probably not looking directly at Tenzin, but he's Tenzin's looking directly at him. So the Red Lotus is here. And then Zaheer's basically like, I'm going to kill you all unless the Avatar comes.
Yeah, because like they were all trying to escape.
Yeah.
So I mean, everybody was trying to essentially rally everybody else up to try to escape to the Bisons, but we see at every instance a member of the White Lotus is stopping all of them, whether it be with Lava or even like capturing Opal and like holding like ice daggers to her actual throat to get them to come with them, and then Zaheer stops Tenzin and his family himself, so they rally all of them up. And they're kind of just, they're like, what do you want from us? And it's like, oh, we don't want to hurt you, or we don't want anything from you. It's like, essentially, you're just leverage for us to be able to get to Korra.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is that like Tenzin's like, you're never gonna get Korra, and then Zaheer's like, oh no, yeah, we're gonna get her one way or another. And then
so you don't have a choice. It's a yes, I do.
And then Tenzin starts popping off. Holy crap! Okay, let's talk about this because, well, Tenzin's also like Kaya Bumi. It's like, I might have asked Kaya and Jinora, but go on.
It's like I put his little girl in harm's way again.
Yeah, I mean, Bumi or Jinora? Like, like if Zaheer is coming after you, who do you want to have on your side, Bumi or Jinora?
I don't want my daughter because I know this is a trained killer. Like,
and Bumi,
I mean, the guy's like, just my brother. He's gonna.
I mean, he's like an accomplished something. He's like an accomplished general. He could probably C-man. Fight in some.
Not really.
Did you say demon?
I said seaman.
Seaman, yes.
Not really trained in hand-to-hand combat. More of strategical planning.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
as we see,
he's got kind of like a wild, wild fighting style when we see him on like Gazan's back and everything.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Kaya and Bumi's part of the fight before we talk about Tenzin, because I feel like there's a lot more to Tenzin's, and I want to give Kaya and Bumi a little bit of the credit that they deserve. Holding off Minghua and Gazan, at the same time, you know, barely. Kaya is actually faring a little bit better than Bumi. We see Kaya actually having a fight with Minghua,
yeah,
a little bit, and I'm like, okay, you're the daughter of like greatest waterbender in the world.
Yeah, but Minghua is her reaction time is. Yeah. Perfect.
Minghua might actually be the greatest waterbender in the world.
Honestly, well, not the greatest, but just offensively, her tactics are amazing because she like, for her, it's not more of like disabling my opponent. It's like, I'm going to murder you.
Yeah, like, straight up.
She uses the edges of the points of her water arms. She normally does creates them into icicles and sharpens them out. So we were seeing that she was cutting rock with them, and as she's whirling around, we see that it's broken off. But immediately as it's thrown at her, she grabs it, throws it back, and then throws two more in her direction before she hits her. She finally hits her with a like a block of ice instead.
Yeah, yeah. So she's incredibly fast. Has such like command over. The whips. And so Kaya, like, you know, like she's obviously like very skilled herself, able to like you know, break the tips of them as they're coming at her, but isn't able to like kind of continue to hold that off, you know what I mean? Like she's only able to do that once, do a few more dodges, and then starts getting hit. As we see behind them, we just literally see Bumi just running away from
that's
Gazan.
All I can do. Yeah, I mean, come on, like lava, like
yeah,
it's
yeah,
not like
yeah,
oh
yeah.
I can take an air blast or I can take a rock to the chest or something. It's like lava, like there's not much you can do, especially if you've never you know faced that before.
Yeah, and I mean, let's give him some credit. Like he is able to like you know pick some angles and get on top of Gazan and like
bite
on
him
his back and bite him and stuff like that. And I mean, it's effective in kind of holding him off for a little bit.
Would have gone for the ear.
Yeah, Mike Tyson's him. But he ends up, you know, getting flipped off of Gazan's back, and then they both end up kind of getting pushed off of the side of the mountain. Well, no, that's not actually what happens. What happens is that Kaya is able to push Minghua.
Yeah, so Minghua had like an entire like ice sword, like going straight towards her, but she was like all attack. So she got blown off the edge, but she immediately like. Octopus armed her way up.
And oh yeah, she comes back up like
yeah.
like a literal demon, like just completely like I looked back at Charisse when she was watching, and her mouth was just like wide open. Like I don't know if you've seen those videos of people watching like there's like this like one I don't watch a lot of TikToks, but there's this one TikTok of this girl watching the finale of Avatar: The Last Airbender for the first time when Aang goes back into the Avatar state, and she's just like wide mouth the entire time, and this person like looks at the TV, and this girl's just completely wide mouth, and this girl's completely wide mouth again, and then that was like Charisse at this point. She was like, "Oh my god, like what's happening?" I was terrified. Kai and Bumi get like knocked off the side of the mountain, and we get a little bit of a callback to Sokka and Toph off of like the side of the airship. Mm-hmm. Even to the point where there's another airship coming at them.
Yeah.
And so the difference is here, you have to let go or else you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Which they do. And they fall very, very far to their injury, but not their death, which is good. So let's go back to Tenzin, because this is wild. While Pili is in the airship, kind of trying to snipe the airbenders, Minghua and Gazan are busy dealing with Kaya and Bumi. And then it's just Tenzin versus Zaheer, which is like a showdown that felt really inevitable for this season. Mm-hmm.
I wish there was more of that, because, I mean, immediately when they all split up, Zaheer was running from Tenzin. So we kind of see the different tactics that they have with Zaheer kind of almost like jumping and climbing, like climbing onto edges to try to get away and to get some leverage over Zaheer. But we see Tenzin kind of taking his time. So he was more of a fluid in his movements, because he took the time to build up and then kind of spin his way up to these ledges that Zaheer was kind of struggling a little bit more to get to.
Kind of using his whole body as a propeller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like taking that extra second to build up his power to get to wherever he was.
Yeah. And I mean, just the moves that like Zaheer is definitely like no slouch, right? But the moves that Tenzin is pulling out, like there's nothing that Zaheer can do to surprise Tenzin. Tenzin has like a contingency for everything. Just the way his body moves, it's like Tenzin's body is air. Like it's just it can flow in any direction, and push you in any direction, and can adapt to any direction. It's just everywhere, right?
Well, he did surprise him though. So Zaheer did surprise him when he was able to flip directly over him.
Yeah, but even Tenzin had an answer for that and was just able to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just the thing. Like, it was still such a surprise, because what we see normally in airbending avoid innovate tactics, it's a left to right. So it's trying to find their center point behind your opponent, and be able to avoid any direct strikes. Mm-hmm. So something that's going straight over you was different. And I feel like it's different than what Tenzin's normally used to, because he's not used to someone being so limber and loosen their movements as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, how often is he personally fighting like airbenders other than, you know, teaching his kids?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Totally. That's a really good point. But even to the point where Tenzin's able to adapt, anything that Zaheer blows at Tenzin, Tenzin's just kind of like, you missed. Oh, by the way, here's a hit on you. And then like even shows that ab strength as he goes on one leg and just kind of like bends all the way backwards and just like does the intro to the Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
Kind of. That's the intro to Korra. Yeah. But just kind of like very, just like that dude, that ab strength, just completely like just keeping him up. But, you know, Tenzin, like if Kaya and Bumi had been able to hold off Minghua and Gazan a little bit longer, Tenzin would have had that fight. And then even to the point where Minghua and Gazan are helping Zaheer, Tenzin is not, you know, able to attack, but he's still able to defend and hold them off. And it's only until Pili comes in and puts in that final blast that Tenzin kind of gets.
Well, she blasted him twice prior to that. Well, not prior to that. She blasted him once prior, because that's when he was getting the upper hand on Zaheer.
On Zaheer, yeah.
And then, like, she, like, hits the mountainside. Mm-hmm. And then that, like, ricochets, blasts into Tenzin. So that's when Tenzin starts, like, trying to avoid and evade again. But there's just, like, too many opponents as everyone's kind of, like, taking hits on him. So he's avoiding some and taking other hits.
Yeah.
And even when he's, like, trying to get the upper hand, because, like, no matter how often he was getting, like, knocked down from all these hits, he was still getting back up.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until that second hit from Pili that it kind of just, like, it took a toll on him, and that's when he finally got pushed into the corner.
I'm at the point where I think that Tenzin probably could have taken any two of them.
Yeah. Most likely.
And I think that he could have probably taken three of them without Pili. I think he would have, like,
I'm not sure about that.
I think he would have been able to hold his own and escape. I don't think he would have been able to beat them, mm-hmm. but I think he would have. Tenzin versus Zaheer. Zaheer lost. Zaheer was Zaheer was losing, and he had already lost the fight until Puli came in and started stepping in. Tenzin is a certified, incredible airbender. Like just incredible, greatest airbender in the world currently. Probably top three. Number other top three: Jinora and Zaheer. That's what it's looking like right now. But yeah, I was just really, really like impressed by that fight. But Tenzin's even continuing to try to fight, and he says, as long as there's air in my lungs, like I won't let you.
It's not over.
It's not over. Yeah, that's what he says. As long as there's air in my lungs, it's not over. And then like they just like beat him off screen.
So like we pan over as like we can still hear him getting pummeled and see even a couple hits before it kind of like pans towards behind a wall.
Yeah, very and very Jet-esque.
Yeah, and this is when I watched this like two, three weeks ago. Oh, actually a little longer than that, when Steph was watching it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I started crying.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just such a hard, like, 2 minutes to watch where we're, like, seeing him get the upper hand, get hit, and, you know, try to regain some balance and some clarity and try to avoid again and continue to get pummeled until we see him kind of get backed into the wall. And at that point in time, he's, like, he's grasping onto his, like, his arm because he's hurt. He has bruises. Yeah. So it just looks like he's down. Like you, at that point, I'm like, you have to give up. Like you have to. And for him to be like, I'm not going to. Like I'm going to continue to fight. And for him, it's not fighting for himself. Mm-mm. It's truly fighting for everyone there, because it's, as he believes, like they're going to, they're using them as leverage to get to Korra. They're willing to hurt his family. So for him, he's not fighting for himself, but he's fighting for everyone around him and to continue even when things seem like completely lost.
And I think this is like something that this show has that Korra specifically has not done incredibly well very often, mm-hmm. is that the fight is a means of storytelling, right? Yeah. Like that's it happened some in season one, definitely didn't happen in season two, but here, like, the fight that is happening, they are telling a story, which is like something that's, I mean, really common in like in anime. Right, mm-hmm. like, if we talk about like My Hero Academia, like My Hero Academia is masterful at telling a story through their fight scenes,
mm-hmm.
And that's what this scene was, and that's what the rest of the fights in this season will continue to be, and I think that's where like people like you and people like me meet in the middle for this show, mm-hmm. in the sense of like we both like the fights, we both like the storytelling, but when you can merge those two together. Like I would tell you that I would probably tell you that like my favorite part about this episode was the storytelling and the fight was great. You might say like the fight was amazing and the storytelling was great too. Mm-hmm. But like I think that both of those are true because of how they do it, you know?
Yeah.
It was just so amazing to watch.
Yeah, so at this point, like I mentioned, like when I watched it with Steph, I was like literally like shedding tears. Mm-hmm. And then she looks over at me and I'm like, Tenzin's dead. Mm-hmm. So I told her that Tenzin died, and she was like, "What?" And then she started crying too. And then we immediately went into the next episode.
Yeah, well, dude, like I you know, remember when I was first watching this, I was like, "Did Tenzin die?" And it's like it's left specifically ambiguous because this was we had to wait another week until the next episode, you know. So some of you who are like who are watching this for the first time, if you're only watching an episode a week so that you can keep up with us, I highly doubt that you were only able to stop here because the credits roll immediately after we pan behind the wall.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
Oh no, we get one other scene.
Oh yeah, because we forgot to mention that Kai decides to be the hero as the airbenders go towards the stables with the bison.
Mm-hmm,
and tries to fight Pili on his own.
Yeah, so Pili's doing some sparky sparky boom man explosions at them, not letting them get to the flying bison, so Kai's like, I'm not going to just sit here and do nothing. So he takes a glider from someone and he flies up And at this point in time, we kind of see something different. I don't know if you noticed it, but Pali was kind of exploding, stopping her explosions midair. So prior to this, we've only seen like a straight linear line into something dense.
No, we haven't, really? Actually. We've seen her, I keep forgetting to mention this to you, but we see her curve her shots all the time.
What I meant is like it hits something like something physical, something dense.
Oh yeah, when it hits something, it explodes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we've always seen like it goes in whatever trajectory it's going to, mm-hmm. and once it reaches its like solid point, that's when it explodes. So from my understanding, I never believed that they were like controlling when and where it was going to stop or when it was going to explode. It's just like it's going until it finds something, right? This mm-hmm. is the first time that we see like she had mid-air shots that didn't hit Kai yet, and they just exploded. So she was able to control where these explosions and how far they were going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's crazy. she's literally, you know, the unsung most threatening member of the team, to be honest. You know, like. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, it feels like there's some countermeasures that you can take to, like, fight them. It's like, with her, it's like, I don't know. You might just kind of get blown up before you see it, you know?
Get those pebbles.
But Kai actually is able to hold her off long enough so that the airbenders can escape,
mm-hmm.
but gets blown out of the sky himself.
Yeah.
But what we actually end up seeing is that he didn't fall down to his death. He fell into a tree. He was hanging from a tree, and then a baby bison saves him. And then mm-hmm. He says, we have to go find the others, I think. Is that what he said? Yeah, I couldn't remember if he said Jinora or the others.
Just Jinora. Forget the rest.
We gotta go find Jinora. I wouldn't be surprised. yeah, dude, this episode is just crazy. Like, I, after watching this episode, Charisse is like, do you have to record yet? And I'm like, no. She's like, can we watch the next one? Like, yeah, let's do it. It's so, like... It's all just so good. It's all just so well written. I think that it felt like they fit so much into this episode too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't see this episode. I'm like, this episode's like a, is it a 10?
I don't know. And that's the thing. Like, I really don't know. I want to say a 9.5, but I'm like, is it a 10? I really enjoyed it. It got me feeling a certain way.
In my belief that there's no such thing as that there's I'm sorry, I don't know what's happening in my voice. There's no such thing as perfection.
Mm-hmm.
I think I want to give this a 10, and I probably will give the next two episodes a 10 as well. But and the reason is because I feel like this episode, like I talked about earlier, it marries the visual grandiosity and mm-hmm. the storytelling into one aspect. You know, Tenzin's just not fighting this guy that feels like it's a really inevitable fight, which it was, but he's also fighting this is like the peak of Tenzin character development, right? Like
mm-hmm.
I feel like Tenzin's story arc, you know, we get him in the fourth season and he does stuff, but his story arc ends here. Like he has reached the end of his story arc at this point where my mission is to teach the Avatar airbending and to have a family and make sure that airbending is passed down through my family. Now I'm given the opportunity to rebuild the entire Air Nation. I get to redefine myself as Tenzin, not the son of Aang, just Tenzin, and I am going to rebuild the Air Nation because it's what I want to do,
mm-hmm.
and it's my dream. Yeah. And now I'm going to lay my life down to protect everything, because I've come so far getting to know myself. I've come so far to achieve this goal, and I will not let anything stand in the way. Like if my dream isn't achieved, I will die before I let this dream not be achieved, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't think that there's any more character development that we can give to Tenzin.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I really don't think there is.
Yeah.
I know that he has like another moment in this season, but I feel like that seed was already being planted and growing, so it mm-hmm. doesn't feel like it's a payoff. I feel like we already got the payoff for that, so I don't know. Like, to me, this fight was the epitome of Tenzin's character arc through the entire series.
All right, I'll give it a 10.
I want to give it a 10. You don't have give it a 10.
All right, Jan, I'll give it a 10.
Oh my gosh, Tony. Okay. Well, let us know what you guys thought about this episode. You know, like we said, we're only ramping up until the end here. Mm-hmm. Things do not slow down one bit. And oh my God, next week, this is probably, like, I asked on Twitter a couple weeks ago what people's favorite episodes were. And this one came up a couple of times, and I never actually responded to people saying what my favorite episode was, because I was waiting until we got here. Next week, I think this might be my favorite episode of Korra ever.
Ever?
Yeah, this might be my favorite episode of Korra ever. Up there with maybe, like, one or two episodes in season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Korra alone is really good. But, I think this is probably my favorite episode of Korra. And if I'm being honest, probably one of my favorite episodes of Avatar.
Nice.
So I cannot wait for next week. But until then, my name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And we will catch you all next time.
Bye.